All comments, views, and opinions expressed during the following program do not reflect the views of this station. All topics discussed are meant for educational purposes only. Talk with your doctor before starting any new treatments. Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned to find out how you can open your mind to new possibilities in life.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And this is a show where we deal with mental health issues and a whole wide range of them at that. My basic approach to my practice professionally as well as my life personally is one of a holistic approach, which means body, mind, and spirit. To me, there's a real importance in not compartmentalizing or isolating our behaviors from our thoughts, from our physical being, from the heart essence of who we are. And to me, the healing really comes about when we become more conscious of that and learn how to integrate those aspects of ourselves. And that's when the balance shows itself in our lives, I believe. And tonight's topic actually is a follow-up from last week's show dealing with the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Last week, if you had listened in, we talked about healing the terrorist within, you know, how our mind in our grief, but also things that happened to us growing up, can play the terrorist within ourselves. This week is going to be, I think, more directly related to the attacks of September 11th, 2001 in New York, and I'll be introducing later on a very special guest, Rob Weiss, who's been on my show before, who actually, as a therapist, spent a month in New York after the attacks counseling survivors of the terrorist attacks. And having known Rob and read some things he's written on that, I was very moved and felt like this would be a good way to reach some closure in this year-long grieving that we've all been going through and probably will continue to go through for the rest of our lives. So I'd like to start by talking about trauma. And there is a very short Native American story I have here called Two Wolves. And it goes like this. A Native American grandfather was talking to his grandson about feelings after the attacks. He said, "I feel as if I have two wolves fighting in my heart. One, the vengeful, angry, violent one. The other wolf is the loving, compassionate one." The grandson asked him, "Which wolf will win the fight in your heart?" The grandfather answered, "The one that I feed." To me, this is a very simple way of stating that what we keep giving energy to will keep growing. What our negative beliefs are will become bigger negative beliefs and become very self-destructive. And, I mean, to me, that's basic metaphysical principle. But how do you apply that to something like a major trauma in our lives? And to me, there's a difference between a personal trauma and what we might consider a collective trauma. Personal trauma might be a car accident we get into, or the death of a loved one. You know, maybe it's been a trauma where we were in an accident, or maybe mugged or robbed, something like that. As a collective trauma would be like a hurricane, tornado, ravaging a whole community, a terrorist attack like we had a year ago and like we see so often in so many countries like Israel and the Middle East and Northern Ireland. So there's this collective trauma that all of us experience. And, of course, the whole world experiences collective trauma a year ago and are still in it. And if we start for a moment talking about our personal traumas, within that collective trauma, everyone had their own personal trauma. Within the collective trauma of the terrorist attack, each individual, and I know Rob will be talking somewhat about this later, each individual watching television thousands of miles away or there directly in New York or Washington or Pennsylvania had their own personal experience of this trauma. And so what do you do with that? What do you do when, how do you know that you have been traumatized? Well, of course, when it's something that big, all of us have it, some expression of trauma, some experience of it. One thing that I think is important is that everyone copes and deals with things in their own way. There's no right or wrong. There's no, well, you should be strong, or, you know, why aren't you crying yet? Why aren't you over this yet? Those types of statements that we hear very often, or maybe even have said ourselves to people or said to ourselves about what we've gone through. Why aren't I over this yet? Why aren't I stronger? Everybody grieves and experiences trauma in their own way and has their own pattern in their own healing based on what we grew up with, based on whatever other belief systems that we have. So there are common responses to disasters and traumas like this. And a short list of them would be things like disbelief and shock, fear and anxiety about the future, disorientation, apathy, and emotional numbing, irritability and anger, sadness and depression, a feeling of powerlessness, extreme hunger or lack of appetite, difficulty making decisions, crying for what seems to be no apparent reason, headaches and stomach problems or any other physical ailments, insomnia and difficulty with sleeping, excessive drinking or drug use. Now, most of these reactions will decrease as time passes and you focus attention on daily activities. But because everybody experiences stress differently, don't compare your progress with others, and don't judge other people's reactions and emotions. Now, for some people, though, these symptoms or these reactions don't abate in time. And the importance of being conscious of that is knowing when it's appropriate to seek professional help in getting through some of this. I mean, we all have heard of post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that's usually something, or post-traumatic stress disorder, is usually something that people are aware that they're going through many years after an event and haven't connected their symptoms with an event so long ago. So when is it appropriate to seek professional help? Well, you know what? Anytime's appropriate to seek professional help. And again, this is something that I'll be discussing with my guest in a little while. We talked for a minute here about what are common responses to disaster, to traumas. And if you really were listening to that list, you probably related to almost everything on that list. I know I did reading that list, because at different times in our lives as human beings, we all experience shock over a situation or anxiety about the future or irritability and anger, feeling powerless. It's normal, it's natural, it's part of being human. But the biggest problem usually arises for most people is when they don't acknowledge their own humanity, when they don't let themselves feel what they're feeling, when they go into that disorientation, apathy, or emotional numbing that I mentioned in that list. It's the numbing that so many people, I think, get themselves into trouble with, whether it's through drugs and alcohol or whether it's just overwork or keeping themselves so busy that they're not aware that they're trying to avoid facing a situation that needs to be dealt with. So, again, it's one thing to isolate because you've had your own trauma and you're going through this personally. But it adds a whole nother dimension when an entire community, country, or world is going through a trauma, has gone through a trauma, like terrorist attack, like a war, or anything like that. When you have the company of other people who are all going through the same thing, again, people still may choose to isolate and not acknowledge that they're part of a community, all in grief, all in shock, all in disbelief, anger, sad. Or they may find comfort in the fact that they're not alone in this. But very often they may not know that they're not alone in something if they're not willing to open up and talk about it, if they're not willing to express themselves. And talking about it, to me, is probably the first step and one of the more important things that any of us can do under any circumstance that is disturbing to us. It helps relieve stress, and it helps us realize that other people share our feelings. You know, it's the same reason why group therapy is as effective as it is, because all of a sudden you're in a room with other people who are opening up about things that maybe you can relate to, and maybe you realize you're not so alone in feeling afraid or feeling hurt. Or maybe you learn something about how someone else has gone through something and might get some insight into how you might help yourself. So, again, talking about it is probably one of the most important things one can do. And if you don't have someone to talk to, writing about it is at least a good alternative to that. If you do feel isolated, if you don't feel like you're safe opening up to anyone, keeping a journal or a diary, or just, you know, going on and onto your computer and typing and moving that information out of your mind and out of your body, may help bring some clarity and maybe get you to a place where you can reach out and ask for help outside yourself. So, again, to me, this is basically what therapy is about. Whether it's crisis intervention or ongoing therapy, it's what this show's about, is how people can open up, feel safe, why they need to, where they can go to get the help that they need. And, of course, this show may be one of those things. I know I get emails from people saying, thank you for saying something that you said on the show because it gave me some confidence to take action, or it helped answer a problem, or when you talked with that caller, I was relating to everything that was going on there, and it was as if I had called in myself. Now, with that in mind, I remind all of you that this is a live call-in show, and if throughout the show you have any questions or comments or input, or something's being triggered in you based on what we're talking about tonight, the toll-free number is 866-536-1100. That's our new toll-free number, 866-536-1100. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, I'll introduce you to my guest, Rob Weiss, so stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today. Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altschuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic is trauma and grief counseling the survivors of 9/11. And I was actually hoping to have this guest on last week on 9/11, but he was actually out of town. So I want to introduce him right away. He's been a friend of mine actually since the 80s. His name is Rob Weiss. He's a licensed clinical social worker here in Los Angeles and the clinical director of the Sexual Recovery Institute. He was a guest on a few months ago. We talked about his book on cyber sex addiction. Rob, I really welcome you and thank you for being on the show again.
It's a pleasure. And actually, I think it's more appropriate to be on tonight because I was in New York not on 9/11, but actually a year ago this week, responding not to the events as they unfolded right away, but to the trauma and the shock right after.
Mm-hmm. Can you just describe or explain how a therapist from Los Angeles ended up in New York for a week doing this type of counseling, how it came about, and how you got involved in it?
Yeah, I mean, well, for one thing, I'm a New Yorker. I mean, I was born and bred in New York, and so I feel a great affinity with New York City, and I think, you know, as anyone does with their hometown, no matter how big or how small, when you grow up somewhere, it always has a place in your heart. And for me, that's New York. And although it's been many years since I've lived there, I felt a very personal, beyond being a therapist, I felt a very personal response to what happened there.
Sure.
And I think like everybody else that I encountered, you know, my response to the trauma was, I want to do something. You know, and I think that I saw that all around me was, you know, what can I do? You know, I think we often see that when there's a collective trauma, as you called it, Stuart, you know,
mm-hmm.
when there's a hurricane or an event of some disastrous proportion, you know, we collect blankets, we come together in our communities and we try to help people as best we can. And I found that all around me, I felt that people, being so far away, you know, all the way across the country, many people wanted to do something. And I had that experience, you know, what could I do? And I felt very fortunate to have some connections as a therapist to people on the East Coast and therapists on the East Coast. And I got a phone call about 4 or 5 days after, about somewhere around September 14th or September 15th of last year, and by a therapist who said, you know, we are so overwhelmed with people needing immediate help, especially down in downtown in the financial district where people are actually thinking about going back to work. And you know, in buildings that are a block away or 2 blocks away or 3 blocks away from the World Trade Center. And, you know, they want to resume some kind of normalcy to their lives or they have to just go back to work. And their employers want to help them deal with the fear and trauma and shock that they had experienced that day being at work or the anxiety they have about going back to that part of town to go to work or... and of course, you know, it's not like, I think a lot of companies plan on having counseling services and counselors available if there's a robbery in their business or a problem in their company or, you know, someone does something terrible in a business or someone gets fired or has a heart attack. You know, businesses count on having a counselor or two available, but no one counted on that many counselors being needed all over the city. You know, it's such a huge crisis. And so there was a demand and a need for counselors of unprecedented numbers. And they called for therapists all over the country to come to New York and try to help.
Who was they? Who called? Was there a particular organization that pulled this together, or was it just different groups all over New York?
I was contacted by employee assistance organizations because large companies have employee assistance organizations that have therapists on call should there be, for example, Cantor Fitzgerald or IBM or American Express all have corporate therapy organizations that are available should something bad happen in the workplace. You know, if you if you work at a post office and there's, you know, so there's someone shoots somebody, or you work in a bank and there's a robbery, those companies, you know, the post office or Wells Fargo or whomever it is, has therapy groups that they can call and say, there's been a crisis in the workplace. You know, we have a contract with you. Can you send some therapists in to help us deal with this, help our employees deal with the crisis? But when every company in the whole city, when every financial company in a whole section of the city is dealing with a crisis, there couldn't possibly be enough professionals to help deal with that all at the same time. And so these companies were calling all over the country trying to get people to come help. And I got a call.
And you responded, as I know is a big part of who you are in terms of service.
But I also, thank you for that, but also, for me, again, it was like everybody else. I wanted to do something. My personal response to crisis is,
right.
You know, what can I do? What can I do for my country? What can I do to help? What, you know, put me on a plane.
Well, we need to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk more directly about what your experience is like in New York. So, everybody, please stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today. Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altschuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. Tonight's topic is trauma and grief, counseling the survivors of 9/11. And my guest tonight is a therapist here in Los Angeles who actually was in New York doing just that, counseling the survivors of 9/11 about a week after the attacks occur. And this is Rob Weiss we're talking to tonight. Rob, you had talked about how the need for therapists existed and how it went out all over the country to get people to New York. Can you tell a little bit about what you found when you got to New York and what your reaction to all that was?
Yeah, I have to say first that flying on an airplane on September, 15th last year was a very odd experience, especially flying now because they hadn't gotten all the security stuff together yet. So, you know, at that point, it was just a breeze to step on an airplane.
But flying to New York.
Of course, everyone was looking at each other like, you know, are you the bad guy? I mean, it was just a very strange thing. And I remember being at LAX last year, at LA International Airport, on the 15th of December, and I have this very vivid memory in my head of just being, and the airport was completely empty. I mean, there were no cars allowed at all, and there were very few people flying, because it was only 4 days after this had happened. And,
right.
You know, just have this haunting memory, you know, my own memories of this whole thing, and just one of my most haunting memories of being in this huge international airport with almost no one there, you know, no cars, very few people. It was just very bizarre. You know, in New York, I was hustled down to these, or I was given these assignments to go down to the financial offices of places like Cantor Fitzgerald and American Express and those companies that had been hit so hard by what happened on 9/11. And I was sent to the offices of companies that were most affected, but not the offices, obviously, they had in the World Trade Center because those were no longer there, but their offices in other buildings that were nearby, because these companies had offices that, you know, in other facilities.
Right.
And I was there to talk to the employees who were back, trying to go back to work and trying to make some semblance of their work life after what had happened. And my job was to go in and do crisis counseling, which means to call them into a room and have them basically talk about their experiences and try to maybe determine if there was anyone who was having a particularly hard time and single them out and talk to them and if they were and get a general sense of how people were integrating back into the workplace and also give them an opportunity, which is one of the things you do in crisis counseling, to just, as you were saying earlier, people just get people talking about it. You know, what did you see? What did you feel? What do you remember? And being there myself, listening to what the stories were so beyond anything that I could relate to. I mean, I did sit in Los Angeles and watch this happen on television, and there I was in New York hearing people talk about, you know, watching the planes hit from being there or coming off the subway and seeing what those people saw and people running out of buildings trying to help and realizing, you know, seeing what was happening and not believing, all of the disbelief and the shock and the and also the just how bizarre it was to be hearing these stories a week later, and there they were sitting in their offices. And you could still see the ash all over the buildings and the streets, and, you know, at that time the streets were all closed off, and the rescue efforts were still going on, and the building, you know, the Trade Center was still very much in the pieces that it was in when the rescue effort was just beginning.
Right.
And I remember seeing, you know, the for me, just seeing a New Yorker, seeing the National Guard and the Army in Battery Park, you know, people carrying guns and rifles and tanks on the streets of New York. I mean, this is just, you know, that beyond bizarre.
What was it doing to you emotionally? I know that as a therapist, we're supposed to be objective and somewhat detached, but I mean, we're humans. It's impossible to maintain that all the time. But
you know,
this isn't a big thing. How was it affecting you that way?
You know, I got on the subway and I left, and I went uptown. And if you know New York at all,
yeah, I was born and raised there too.
It's divided into different parts of the. You know, the city is fairly large lengthwise. It's 18 miles long, and so you can leave that part of town, the financial district, and go into other parts of the city. And that was where I was working, but it was not where I was staying. And so I would leave that part of town at the end of the day and leave all of that crisis behind and go up to, you know, the Times Square area and or up to Lincoln Center and go to the theater or go to museums and. You know, the rest of the city was completely intact, and so it was like nothing had ever happened, you know, except that everyone was so friendly. And I can remember bumping into some woman. I was rushing to get to an appointment, and I bumped into some woman, and she turned around very quickly, and being from New York, I know what that means. You know, it means I'm about to get cussed out. And this woman turned around, and she just said to me, "Oh, I love that little flag emblem you're wearing."
Oh.
And I thought, and that was bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
People in New York aren't nice when you stumble over them in a hurry.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just, you know, typical of, again, where people were at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I did to take care of myself was I just got out of there. You know, I just went to other parts of town and did normal, sort of normal things. But I was sort of fascinated with the tragedy of it, and I think as many of us were, just sort of all caught up in it. And I felt revulsion and sadness and tragedy and you know, I just all kinds of feelings of my own. And I just kind of kept that in a little corner in order to be able to help these folks.
That's kind of what I was picking up, and I'm not surprised to hear you say that. I think as therapists, sometimes it's the only way we can get through working with something difficult, with a client that's difficult, is even if we're being majorly affected by it, to be able to put it in its place in order to maintain our true purpose there. So,
but I wrote, and I think, you know, something you said earlier, Stuart, about writing,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the ways that you came to find out that I was there is that, or that I was a therapist who was in there counseling people after 9/11 was that you read an article that I'd written about it. And
that's right.
And that had to do with that I didn't know what to do with myself. I mean, I didn't know what to do with this information. People were telling me these stories of horrendous tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going back to my hotel room and having these images in my head of people jumping out of buildings.
Yeah.
What do I do with these images? You know, and I just thought, I've got to write them down. I mean, that was all I could do. And so that's what I did. And, you know, I wrote them down.
What were some of the, I hate using the word, what were some of the more common issues that you were finding yourself dealing with the people coming to you, and how well received and how well used were you by these companies, by the employees?
I think at that point, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 days after it had happened, I think in many ways, people just wanted to get on with their lives and get back to work. And I think this is not unusual with a tragedy that, especially in the early stages, that people are still, they want to, I think oftentimes in the early stages of a tragedy, people want to pull normalcy back around them as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the crisis counselor or the person who comes along and says, let's talk about that, is an intruder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they are, even though they are doing the right thing by saying, let's talk about this, sometimes I think I was met with some, a little bit of hostility. Who are you, a stranger, to come in here and tell us that we have to sit down and talk about this?
Was this an obligatory thing in these companies?
No.
That's what I thought. Okay.
It was not obligatory. For some, by some I was, I think for some people there was a lot of uncomfortable laughter and, you know, oh yeah, let's go to the counselor, boy, we're really sick now, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think other people took it very seriously, but they didn't want to seem too upset in front of their neighbor or their, you know, these are people, and also I think you have to remember the kind of people who went through this tragedy. This was in the financial center, and in general, I don't think that, and I'm being very general here, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sure your callers and listeners can write in and annihilate me later, but, you know, these are not folks generally who wear their hearts on their sleeve.
Well,
these are people who are working in business and banking, and, you know, that those are not areas that particularly lend themselves to a lot of emotional revelation on a daily basis
mm-hmm.
to each other, and that now they're being asked to sit in a room and cry together, and that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, not their day-to-day experience. So not that I asked them to cry together, but
mm-hmm.
the issues we're talking about are obviously very emotionally laden.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was asking of them was difficult just to even talk about it.
What you were offering.
What I found was most moving for them was talking about things like their families and their children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't talking about watching people jump out of buildings or seeing the planes hit or walking through the ash in the streets or even running into a building thinking they were going to die because the streets turned black. I mean, all of that stuff you've heard on TV or read about. But the things that seemed to really move people were when they would talk about coming home that day and seeing their children and realizing that they were safe and they were home and that they were with their families and how much they loved their kids or how grateful they were that they had their partners or, you know, they'd call their mom and they, you know, the feeling of connection with their community and their family and they finally got home. And those were things that they could relate to with each other and feel joy and connection about.
Mm-hmm.
Or going back to work a few days later and realizing that so-and-so had made it or that so-and-so had not been hurt or that they had been able to survive, that a friend had survived or You know, those are the feelings, the joyful, happy feelings, the hopeful feelings, the grateful feelings. Those seem to be the things that people actually were tearful about and could connect about much more readily than the tragedy.
And once again, the lesson in that being that sometimes it takes something major like this for us to stop and really appreciate what we do have. And to be able to acknowledge that on a more regular basis without having to have our defenses ripped out from us, but to be conscious, to be able to say, I love you and I'm glad you're in my life, and to do the kind things, like you said, the New Yorkers were doing then and stuff, without having to have gone through that collective trauma.
Well, I'm not sure we can live, just for me personally, I'm not sure we can live at that peak of gratitude and appreciation and love on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
At least not in this world of pressure and stress that we live in. I wish there were other ways that we could come to appreciate and value each other than through tragedy.
Yeah.
And maybe weddings and births and joyful events bring us around to those appreciations too, and those moments of connection. But universally, we don't have as many moments of joy as we do tragedy. And, you know, how many royal weddings are there when we all say, oh, isn't that wonderful? Isn't love a great thing? Compared to bombings, earthquakes, disasters.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot more reasons to collectively say, oh, my God, I'm so glad my home is safe, it seems, than to collectively say, I'm so, you know, isn't the world a wonderful place?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sad that that's the case, but I agree with you, that's the case. I'm assuming that as the week progressed, well, I won't assume anything. As the week progressed, let me ask you, what was different for you at the beginning of the week as opposed to the end of the week? And also, was there a after effect for this after you got home, you know, maybe a week or two or three later from your experience in New York?
I think like a lot of the people who were there, I felt very much identified with what was going on there, and it was hard to come home because, you know, then it was just showing people pictures and talking about it.
Yeah. We're gonna need to take a break right here, Rob, so hold that thought, so I don't want to have to stop you in the middle of it. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Tell the Truth Faster and my guest, Rob Weiss.
Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today. Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altschuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschuler, and tonight's topic actually has been trying to, you know, a year later, reach some closure with the concept of the trauma of the 9/11 attacks. My guest tonight is Rob Weiss, who's a licensed clinical social worker here in Los Angeles. I want to talk about the year anniversary, which is one of the reasons I'm doing this show, but also the fact that I had my own personal experience. I hadn't been back to New York until this past June when I went to celebrate my dad's 80th birthday. And I remember flying into Newark And for the first time, the reality of it not being on TV, but actually flying over, as we're coming in for a landing, of course, you get to see the New York skyline. And for the first time, it was the reality of seeing that skyline without the two towers there. And it wasn't a photograph and it wasn't a film. And I remember starting to cry. And it's like, I think this is one of the reasons why we do memorials, why the grieving goes on for certain, because there are different points in the continuum that affect people differently. What are your thoughts on that and on these memorials or the year anniversary stuff?
I'm really glad the media is doing it and handling it and you know, it's just so interesting to me how everyone has their own response. And like you said at the beginning of the show, it sounds kind of namby-pamby, but however anyone responds is just fine. Because there are people who couldn't wait to see what the media was going to present and were really looking forward to having some reflective time on that date and, you know, were really thoughtful in considering where they were at. And there are other people I talked to who really just wanted to watch movies, didn't want anything to do with that day, were avoiding it, didn't want to think about it, thought it was overdone, and that they were kind of burnt out on it. And, you know, and I just thought, well, that's all fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody gets to have a deal with it however they want to. And yet I'm glad it is being brought up and being presented to us for our consideration and we get to do whatever we want to do with it.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised myself because I was really not planning on focusing that much, like sitting and watching a lot of TV or going, and yet I found that midnight, as the clock turned midnight into 9/11, I found myself pulling out some candles that I knew would burn for the whole day and lighting them. Mm-hmm. And watching this amazing thing about the, it was Dateline or one of them that did this hour piece on the flight controllers and what they were going through. They actually interviewed the guys that were up there in the towers dealing with these planes. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different perspective, and it really helped me do a little bit more understanding and healing, believe it or not. So what did you end up, I mean, how did this impact you a year later, having gone there to do what you did with the counseling and the crisis intervention?
I found myself thinking a lot about the people that I worked with a year ago and wondering about them, you know, wondering what their thoughts were and wondering how they were with their families. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I really listened to something, I don't know, it was Ted Koppel or Dan Rather, one of those folks said, I mean, I did watch a lot of the memorials, and of course, I was reminded of AIDS and watching the reading of the names and,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, just how they went through that. And one of the announcers said that, you know, there's a whole generation who will not remember this and won't know of this and will look at this as we look at Pearl Harbor.
Well, that's touching.
And they're just going to know about it as we tell it or they look at, or as they see it, as, you know, in the videos. They're not going to know. They never will know. That they will never have seen a World Trade Center. They won't know a world that had one. They won't, you know, this is
a piece of history.
History.
You know, like the generations today, like when JFK was murdered, when, you know, we were kids and stuff like that, is a whole different reaction than to people just reading about it in textbooks
yeah.
today.
And so, you know, what the immediacy of it all, I mean, that's all going to pass. And where were you then, and what do you remember, and all of that will pass, and it just becomes part of history, and it's just the history that we leave that will be passed on.
Hmm.
But we are talking about things and the feelings about things in ways we never have before.
Another question I have, because I had, and my experience was, even not being in New York, of course it was the topic of a lot of the sessions I had with clients here for quite a while, their own grief and fear and lack of safety. I'm assuming that as a therapist in L.A., you had similar experiences with your clients still needing to do their own grieving and dealing with the trauma even thousands of miles away. It's not just the trauma of the New Yorkers or the people in Washington.
My practice is almost entirely with addicts, and my clients are much too narcissistic to be worried about what's going on in New York.
Okay.
I don't think they even mentioned it.
Wow. Okay.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hear also a wonderful. This is completely unrelated to what you just said, and I apologize.
That's okay.
But the National. The National Museum of Folklore, which is in Washington, did a wonderful piece also on the voices of Pearl Harbor and the voices of 9/11, and they interviewed your average Joe all over the country right after Pearl Harbor, and they compared that to the voices of your average Joe all over the country right after 9/11 and how people responded to what had happened after the two national attacks. And it's so interesting that the feeling of personal violation and patriotism that came out of both of those experiences is very, very similar.
Yeah, I'm not
surprised.
I don't
think that people's emotional responses really change a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. I think human is human, and trauma is trauma, and I think you're right about that. Rob, we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to thank you.
I want to put one more thing out there.
Sure.
Very quickly.
Go for it.
And that is just for any of your listeners and for you yourself to think about, is that I have talked to some of the families and some of the people who didn't die in 9/11, but who were physically harmed or are physically ill because of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of pain and suffering there because they're not being necessarily rewarded or supported in some of the ways of the families who had death. It's almost more difficult for someone who has physical disability or harm in relationship to what happened there and is still suffering with that than to someone who had a death in the family.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. And again, Rob, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. I want to thank my listeners for tuning in, and hopefully you'll tune in again next week. And if you have any questions or want to hear this show or any other shows, go to tellthetruthfaster.com, and all the shows are archived there. Rob, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, is broadcast live every week at the same time. Thank you for listening.